Welcome to Creepy Tales, a spooky podcast adventure with Penguin Teen. I'm your host, Felicity, and for 5 episodes, we've invited some of Penguin Teen's most beloved authors to take a walk on the wild side, to go down a darkened road, light up their pumpkin carving, and get creepy with us. We've challenged our authors to write a 500-word creepy tale with our first author, Melissa Dela Cruz, author of the New York Times best-selling series Alex and Eliza and The Queen's Assassin, leading us off. She'll be then followed by Kat Ellis, whose debut novel, Harrow Lake, has been called a thrilling mind-bender of a novel. And to complete the story, Nina LaCour, the Prince Award-winning author of We Are Okay and Hold Still, and her latest novel, Watch Over Me. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Felicity.
Well, welcome to the show. And all of our authors were provided a visual prompt and a single word to inspire this story, and everyone submitted their contributions to Penguin Teen. So for both Melissa and Kat, this will be the first time they're hearing how the story unfolds after their contribution. The story prompt is The Snake. And Mel, I invite you to lead us off.
The Snake. Once upon a time, he'd been a prince. That much he remembered. He couldn't remember his name or where he was from, but in the vague reaches of his now ophidian mind, he remembers lavish cushions, peeled grapes, golden bowls heaping with fruit. Now he slithers on the ground, and the only sound he can make is a hiss. Was it a curse, or a witch, or some kind of wish? Was it love, or war? His memory sparks to life, and he remembers. She had seduced him with her dancing, her face veiled under silk. It was the night of the victory feast, and the tiny symbols in her fingers had lulled him with its rhythmic melody. "Meet me tonight at midnight in the forest," she had whispered. He still could not see her face, but he imagined it was beautiful. The night was cold and dry, and leaves crackled beneath his sandaled feet. "I'm here," he called. He looked all around, but there was nothing and no one. Alone. And now he was irritated. He was a prince of the realm, and he had wandered away from the caravan. What was he doing here? He was lightheaded from the wine and unsteady on his feet. In the distance, he can hear the screams, the smell of the fires roasting homes from the raid and roasting meat from the feast. Spoils of war, the scent of a conquered land. They are far from home, and the world is vast, and soon all will raise the king's banner. He is his father's heir, and one day everything the wind touches will be his. He is the most beloved of his brothers, the one with eyes as blue as an oasis. He was about to turn back when he saw her at last. Silk in the moonlight, the chimes of the cymbals. She moved toward him, swaying in the breeze. She came to his side, and he drew her even nearer, smelling the jasmine in her hair, his lips brushing her tender cheek. But before he can move, she has a blade under his throat. "When you came to our home, you offered bounty and friendship, amity and alliance. Your words golden but untrue. Your kingdom has ravaged these lands, your hands red with the blood of my people. Tonight I give you a choice, an honorable death, or live forever as the serpent you are. Choose wisely." She removes the veil, and she is beautiful, but also terrible. The witch of the forest, whom he and his people were warned about when they first came to this place, that to take this land would bring a curse on their heads. He laughed at such superstition. "There is no such thing as a witch, just old folks telling tales to make the royal children go to bed." That was many, many years ago now. That much he is sure. He slinks himself against the silk that brushes against his scales. He has seen himself in the mirror. His eyes are still the blue of the oasis. One day he will have his revenge.
Aderin whirls at the sound of a hiss behind her, certain he's found her at last. But there's no one, nothing there. She scans the dirt floor of her healer's tent for telltale tracks. Looks up too, in case the creature has slithered its way up the tent's frame. But there's no sign of the snake. She lets out a deep sigh, allowing the bustling sounds of the marketplace outside to soothe her frayed nerves. Aderin's about to turn back to the herb she was sorting when the tent flap swishes against the frame of the door. It makes that same soft hissing sound she just heard. Aderin laughs. She was scared by nothing more than a tattered piece of cloth. She resumes her task with the herbs, choosing and weighing those she will add to the tonic for one of her regular patrons, an elderly man who suffers from night terrors. Aderin herself might take a dose of the tonic. God knows she'd welcome a night free from dreams of the blue-eyed serpent, but she doesn't dare dull her senses. To miss a warning of his arrival would mean her death. The signs of the snake's approach have been increasing over the past several days. Aderin feels it in the prickle of her skin, the itch of her teeth. She's being hunted like prey. There are dreams too. Sometimes Aderin sees the prince as he was, blue eyes piercing, his lip curled as he spits the word witch at her. Other times it's the sense of something brushing against her legs under the bedclothes, slithering over her torso, slowly coiling its way around her neck until she wakes, gasping for air. Those are the moments she regrets what she did to the prince, though the regret is always fleeting. The prince's people are monsters. They ransacked Aderin's tiny village, slaughtering any they deemed a threat. And then to drape her in silks and force her to dance for their entertainment until the prince, half in his cups, went from merely leering to pawing at her. It was too much, too far, and she used the forbidden spell to turn the prince into the serpent he truly was. It cost her dearly. She'd had to flee the smouldering remains of her village, knowing the prince, now the serpent, would not rest until she was dead. What troubles you, healer? Aderin startles at the sound of the old man's voice, but it's only her patron come to collect his tonic. No trouble, she says with a practiced smile. Merely wishing for a handsome caller, and here you are. The man snorts with good humour, taking the phial she holds out to him and leaving as soon as payment is made. But as Aderin turns to put her jars in order, the light catches one, and she gasps. There, reflected in the glass, is the blue-eyed snake.
Home. The word rushes her upon sight of the serpent. Home. Her nephew would be 4 years old now. The last time she saw him, he'd been drinking from her sister-in-law's breast. She'd fled her village when it was burning and hadn't returned to see the fire put out. She doesn't know what was lost or what survived. She's seen the serpent. The serpent has seen her. He slithers closer now, but her mind is faster. My prince, she says, you've returned to me. She's just as beautiful as he remembers, but she's no longer terrible. At least, not in any way that he can see. Her eyes are calm, she even smiles. And when she says, I've been pining for this moment, he believes her. I asked you to choose wisely, and you did, she continues. You've lived as a snake for many moons. That was the first test. You traveled a far distance to find me. That was the second. And now, my dear prince, you have only one more test to pass before I'll turn you back into a man and make you my husband. The snake hisses. He doesn't remember any talk of tests, but it was so long ago, all of it, when it happened. He vaguely remembers fire and blood. He almost remembers suffering and death. But as he slithers closer, he has one memory clearer than the rest, that of a beautiful woman placing a peeled grape into his human mouth. Soon he'll be a human man again. Soon Aderin will peel grapes for him and place them in his mouth. She'll be his to have whenever he pleases. How could he have ever thought of her as terrible? Are you ready for the third and final test? Aderin asks. The serpent is upon her now, his head raised so they are eye to eye. You must kill your father, the king. One bite is all it will take for a snake as poisonous and powerful as you. Bring me his ring, and I'll turn you back into a man. We'll be king and queen. Easy, thinks the serpent. The king was never kind to him. What harm is it, really, to hasten the inevitable? The serpent turns and slithers from the tent. Aderin makes a tonic with trembling hands, drinks it down. Little by little, her heart calms. A week passes, and one afternoon she hears the rustle of silk. The serpent has returned. In his mouth is his father's ring. Oh, you have done well, Adarin coos. Her voice is smooth as grape skins. The serpent's mouth begins to water. Close your eyes, she says to him. When you open them next, they'll be the eyes of a man. The serpent does as told. Adarin whacks off his head. She skins the serpent to fashion herself a new pair of boots for her journey. Before she leaves her tent, she sticks her finger into the snake's mouth to fish out the king's ring. She slips it onto her thumb. She laces up her snakeskin boots. Home, she is on her way.
The end.
Yay! 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 That was amazing. I have to
say, when I read that ending, I literally screamed out loud, she's made him into boots. Perfect.
It's so funny because when you sent us the image and it was this snake, this crazy looking snake, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that I'm not going first. So I'm super curious, Mel, like, how did you come up with the idea?
There was something about that photo of the snake, which I hope that listeners will be able to see somehow. He was just so compelling. And, you know, it kind of seemed like he was the character. I did think, like, oh, maybe it's, you know, he's a side character or it's just a snake and it's about a horror. You know, I thought about going the haunted house with a snake. Then I thought, well, what if the snake itself is the star?
Love it.
And Mel, I have to ask, in terms of setting it all up, were you kind of knowing where it was going to go? Or you were like, I'm just going to throw it out there and they have to solve the problems?
I was hoping for an ending like that, you know, Nina. I was hoping that she would win, you know, because he's a snake.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
And so it's a perfect, perfect ending. I have to say, I did think that we would have to read it, so I tried to make mine less sexy. I was like, oh, I have to read it. It can't be X-rayed. Okay.
Well, and Kat, you introduced it.
Yes.
This sort of like this woman. Like, Kat, tell us about that.
Well, I know. I mean, when I read the first part that Mel sent over, and I was like, oh, yes, this is such a great character with the snake. But then I thought, okay, if I follow on directly from this, what am I going to do? Am I going to, you know, follow the snake as he's slithering around hunting for this witch? So I thought, no, I'm going to turn this story on its head. And I thought, right, I'll tell the situation from her perspective, and, you know, then it will all come out. You know, he really deserved what happened to him. And then I thought, once I've set that up, I'll throw it.
Well, you did so much work in the middle section, Kat. I mean, it's pretty, like, you made her so human and like vulnerable and scared, and also, you know, I really rooted for her. And it was cool too, because Mel's section is like, you see her just from, you know, the prince's perspective, and she's this awful character, and then you make her so sympathetic, and I'm absolutely rooting for her. I mean, I guess I am the whole time, because he does terrible things.
Yeah.
Yeah, pillaging this village. Yeah, so, but it was fun.
I still think, yeah, definitely what you said, Nina, in terms of like the first part of the story, I was like, oh, that sucks for him to be a snake. He's, you know, bad, bad young prince, whatever. And then as soon as we went to part two with Kat, I was like, oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I wish I'd known where it was going with the snakeskin boots, because I would have made mention in the middle part of how cold it was.
No, but that's the beauty of it all, is that every part feels connected, but there's these moments that like come out of nowhere, that in each of the sections really jump. They're like, oh, okay, here we go. I loved it so much. And in terms of, I think, for as a writing exercise for all three of you, it's a little bit outside your wheelhouses. Was it something that sort of, I guess, Mel, I'll start with you. Was it like, was it freedom, or was it a challenge to kind of think, I've got to put things in here that are going to help people?
Felicity, I think I wrote it like when it was due. It was kind of like, okay, what are we going to do with the snake? And, you know, and I was a little bit, you know, I knew it had to be a little creepy, but I was hoping it could have some kind of like, you know, you know, I love, you know, kind of the fairy tale-y kind of YA genre. So, and I thought, okay, like, let's set it up. Let's see where they go with it. You know, I was really excited to see where it went.
Well, and Kat, this is sort of, you know, different for you in terms of not of tone and atmosphere, because you write that so well in Harrow Lake, but more like, you know, it's almost a fantasy kind of thing going on here. Was that exciting to tackle?
Yes, it was, well, definitely outside of my usual comfort zone. I mean, I've never really ventured into, you know, the fairy tale fantasy sort of style of writing, but it was really exciting to try it. I loved it. Such an unusual exercise for me. Maybe I'll do a bit more of that in the future.
And Nina, I think always the hardest or the easiest thing in a way is to bring it home, and you've got all these things out there. Did you have threads that you thought, I can't pick that up, or I do want to pick that up, and you couldn't quite make it work? Was there a different
ending? No, this is, I just felt like this is where it was going. I really wanted her to whack off his head. And so I think the only thing that was hard was to stick with the 500 words, because I wanted her to like pull out a knife or be hiding a knife. You know, there was like, I wanted to have that kind of like instrument of murder in hand, but I was a little over already, so I kept it brief.
I know, and I was a little worried at one point. I was like, oh no, Nina's gonna make them marry him, and this is gonna be a bad marriage. And then in that last sentence, you were like, boom, and here we go.
Boom. Yeah, that would have been a real mood killer if I had been like, and they lived happily ever after as king and queen.
I mean, this is a happily ever after for the lady. She's got a new pair of boots. She's got some nice jewelry. And she's
That's right.
Well, thank you all both. Thank you all of you so much for doing this. Mel, it was a pleasure to have you start this off. Kat, you carried it through beautifully. And Nina, you definitely finished it off in an emphatic way.
It was so much fun, and so much fun to do it with you guys.
Oh, it was great. So it much fun. Anytime, Felicity. We're here for you.
Yes, absolutely.
I was going to say, you're going to be my personal storytelling machine. That's a dangerous thing to say.
You're on.
For tomorrow's authors, joining us for their creepy tale will be Ali Condy, Isabel Sterling, and Sasha Lawrence. Be sure to read with the lights on until we see you tomorrow.